The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, and now I'm feeling like how is the volume now? Is it okay? Can we have it just a tiny bit louder? Because I know that when I do a guided meditation, that my voice drops and I don't want it to get too soft. Thank you, Bhupal. So for those of you who have been here before, you know that with loving-kindness practice here, that primarily we do loving-kindness for a benefactor, that is, someone who has helped us, supported us in our life, and loving-kindness for ourselves. And I think we all know this, but I'm just going to say it explicitly, that kind of like loving ourselves is not the same as self-preoccupation. I think we all know this, but I'm just going to say this, right? Self-preoccupation has this constricted feeling, me, mine, not me, not mine. You know, everything's kind of viewed through that. Or suppose loving kindness is supposed to be kind of like the opposite, more of like an opening and not an exclusive, you know, get away, that's not mine, this is mine, but more kind of inclusive, like, oh, everything's included, we can do this loving kindness. So self-preoccupation can be a source of a lot of suffering too. I think all of us have this experience, right, where specifically, I'm just thinking right now, I have a regret about something that I said a few days ago, and oh my gosh, what a terrible feeling that is, right? This kind of just going through it again and again in my mind, like I wasn't mindful enough of what was happening, and I said something that wasn't terrible, but still it wasn't the most skillful. Right. I thought like, oh, it was a missed opportunity there. So this kind of self-preoccupation can be a source of suffering. But not only that, when we are fixated on ourselves or viewing everything through the lens of the self, then we just, everything else, right? I shouldn't say everything, most everything else, kind of, there's a certain amount of dissatisfaction that often kind of arises with this self-preoccupation. They tend to go together. When we have the self-preoccupation, we're often fixated on what we think is missing in ourselves, right? That's why I kind of had this like regret of what I didn't say, or I should have said something a little bit different. Like, oh, if I were a better person, I would have known the right thing to say at that time, right? That's kind of what's fueling underneath this little bit of this self-preoccupation and regret. So we tend to have this feeling of what's missing in ourselves and what's missing in our lives, right? Often when we kind of view things through the self-preoccupation, through the lens of me and mine. And when we have that experience, then somehow reality, that is what's actually happening, becomes our adversary because it's a little bit dissatisfying. It's not quite enough. So instead of kind of having this open-hearted, inclusive feeling, we have this self-preoccupation. There tends to be a kind of little fighting with what things are, how things are, this wish for them to be more satisfying, more satisfying, blissful, happy, right? All these things. So not only do we have the sense of dissatisfaction, we have the kind of like reality is a little bit of adversary, but often we find it more difficult to connect with others too. Often because we have this din of a monologue, oh, I should have said this, or do they like me? Oh, they think I'm an idiot, or whatever it may be, right? When we have this self-preoccupation with this monologue, this can be really loud, so much so that we can't quite find our way to connect with other people. Instead, we have this these concerns that seem of primary importance that we can't quite get beyond. I'm not saying that we can put down these concerns always and forever, but we can have them like move into the background and say like, oh yeah, okay, this is my concern. It's part of the human experience that we want to not look like an idiot, and we want people to like us, right? That's part of the experience, but it doesn't have to be our dominant experiences, our dominant motivation. It doesn't have to be the only thing that's pushing us around about how to be or what to say. So in this way, loving kindness practice can help us quiet this din of monologue, of self-preoccupation. It can help us soften some of that feeling that reality is our adversary some way, that we have to fix and somehow make our experience better and more satisfying. Instead, with loving kindness practice, there can be a softening. Not that everything changes, but it stops being so much of a problem if we can kind of just open up and soften our hearts a little bit. Sometimes it doesn't take a lot, just a little bit is enough to kind of like open the door that can kind of loosen some of the grasping, clinging that our self-preoccupation can have. And not only that, loving kindness practice, whether it's for ourselves or for a benefactor, just makes it easier for us to make friends with these different elements in ourselves, these voices that we have, to connect with that and therefore to connect with others. I'm not saying this is easy. Some of this this wish to be liked or this self-preoccupation and the concern to how we look to others and our concern with status and, you know, these types of things, they often have like the force of instinct. And there is a little bit of biology there too, right? So evolutionary biology was right. If we're people like us and we have high status, then we're more likely to have a mating partner that we like. So this is what the evolutionary biologists will say to us. So we don't have to beat ourselves up when we notice this, but we also don't have to be pushed around by it so much. Maybe we can just allow it to be there, this drive, this motivation, this incentive that we see in ourselves. So rather than making this these motivations go away, so that they never arise again, this wish to be liked, for example. Instead, we can take away a little bit of the authority of that voice. It's still there, but we can just recognize it. Oh yeah, here we go. I know this. This is very familiar. I want people to like me. I don't want them to think I'm an idiot or whatever it may be. All of us may have our own particular ones. So loving kindness practice helps us to make friends, quote-unquote, with those voices, those aspects of ourselves. Helps us to connect with them and to connect with others. And this connecting with others can also works the other way, that if we are able to connect with others, we're able to kind of put aside our self-preoccupation enough that we feel like we can have a genuine connection, even if it's just a small, short one. It works the other way, that if we connect with others, it also helps alleviate our self-preoccupation. So there can be a virtuous cycle. And you can start where in this virtuous cycle wherever is easiest. Maybe connecting with others is easiest and to kind of soften your self-concern. Or maybe just to notice the voices that you have and to soften those, and that makes it easier to connect with others. Maybe at different times, different avenues in are more accessible. But loving kindness practice is a way that kind of helps us to do either of those, to connect with others or to connect with the different voices of ourselves or within ourselves, or to just have some spaciousness that we can allow things to be as they are instead of trying to insist that they be otherwise, more satisfying, whatever they may be. So those of you who have been coming here for a while, know that we'll do loving kindness practice. We'll start first with a benefactor and then with the self, ourselves. We start with a benefactor with the idea that we're going to start where it's easiest, where it's accessible, so that we can have this opening, softening movement of the heart, and then build on that. The point here is not to try to do something difficult with the idea, no pain, no gain kind of feeling. No, we're going to kind of like ease into this. So after doing loving kindness for the benefactor, we'll do it for ourselves, as I said. And there are three elements for loving kindness practice. The first is to bring the person, if it's a benefactor, to mind. Many people do that with visualization. Visualization may not be easy for everybody. I'm one of those people. It's a little bit hard for me. It feels like, yeah, it's just not my natural way of being. But all of our minds work differently. So perhaps for you, it's easy and feels natural. So we bring to mind somebody for whom it's easy to love or have loving kindness for respect, care, warmth, maybe tenderness. And often it's easiest to do this with someone for whom we have an uncomplicated relationship. This may mean that it's you do not have an intimate relationship with this person. You don't have to. If nobody comes to mind, or if it's not so clear that, or like you don't have relationships that are not so clear that it's just loving kindness, you're welcome to use any other lovable being. Some people use kittens or puppies or babies. So the first element is to bring this lovable being to mind. The second element is from time to check in with the body, with if there's a felt sense of some softness or warmth or letting go, some ease, peace, contentment. It may feel different at different times. I'm going like this in front of my heart because I often feel it here in my heart center. You may feel it in your belly. You may feel it elsewhere. Your face, maybe some smiling. The third element are the phrases that we say to help us keep the mind kind of on our intention for sending loving kindness to the benefactor. So there isn't anything particularly magical about these phrases. We're just using them as a way to kind of help us keep focused and on the task, what we're doing. So you're welcome to modify the phrases in a way that makes sense for you. So with that as an introduction, we'll do some loving kindness practice. So we can start by taking an alert, upright posture in a way that has alertness, uprightness, as well as ease. We don't want to struggle or get into have lots of pain in such a way that it becomes an entirely unpleasant experience. So if you need to, you're welcome to shift your posture if that feels like that would be supportive. We'll start with a few long, how about three, long, slow, deep breaths. You can use these long breaths as a way to connect with the body. Sometimes it happens with the exhale. There's just a certain amount of tension that just naturally flows out. Not always. But if so, you can just notice. And to support some softening and some ease in the body, which can support softening and ease in the heart and mind. And check in with areas of the body where we often hold tension. Some obvious places are the face, around the eyes, the jaw, sometimes the head, back of the head perhaps, the neck, and the shoulders, allow the shoulder blades to slide down the back. Just notice the arms and the hands. We don't have to make any tension go away. We're just creating the conditions so that if tension could readily go away, it would. We don't have to make it happen. Check in with the back and the whole front of the torso. Often we, without even realizing it, may have some tension in the belly. You can feel the pressure of the chair or cushion against your body. And just feel here, now. The legs and the feet. Perhaps they have a little bit of tightness. Then we'll begin with a little bit of mindfulness of breathing. So just, you can bring your awareness to the sensations of breathing. That can be the movement of the abdomen, the movement of the chest, or the feeling of air going in and out of the nose, whichever feels the most comfortable or feels the most accessible, just rest your awareness there. The nature of our minds, they want to think thoughts. So if you find yourself lost in a thought, just very simply bring your attention back to the sensations of breathing. If your mind is wandering, you can just bring it back and begin again with the sensations of breathing. So this mindfulness of breathing, resting our awareness on the sensations of breathing, can be a place to come back to if you ever feel overwhelmed or confused or lost during these meditations. It can be a resource for you. Very simply, just being aware of the sensations of breathing. And then to begin loving kindness meditation. Bring to mind a benefactor, somebody for whom it's easy to feel warmth, care, respect, kindness, goodwill. As I said, this can be a person or perhaps another type of being. Someone for whom it's easy to feel a softness in the heart or a gentleness. Maybe you don't feel it in the body, but you can feel a potential or intention. Whatever you feel in the body, in the heart center, or wherever else connected with this benefactor, it's okay. We can just allow it to be there. Including not feeling anything at all. And then to support our intention of sending loving kindness, cultivating loving kindness, developing loving kindness, you can repeat silently in your mind after me the phrases. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. You can check in with the body and see if there is a feeling of warmth or kindness, openness, spaciousness. There may be, there may not be. It's both okay. Check in again with the benefactor or lovable being, and again bring this person or being to mind. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. Now I'll be silent for a bit, so you can practice in your own way. You can check in with your body. See if there's a feeling of warmth, care, love, goodwill. If so, you can allow it to get as big as it would like. Or perhaps you're feeling the opposite of love, care, warmth. If so, can you just allow those feelings, experiences to be there? Can you extend some kindness to those feelings? Some kindness and care to those experiences? It might be helpful to open your awareness really wide to allow the uncomfortable feelings to be there. Make space for them. If that makes sense to you. We're not trying to make anything happen. We're creating the conditions in which loving kindness can arise and be cultivated and developed. No guarantee that's exactly what's going to happen. And then we can build on this loving kindness, our intention for loving kindness towards the benefactor, and open the circle of loving kindness, make it a little bit bigger to include ourselves. Of course, we deserve loving kindness. Of course. We deserve to be just as much a recipient as anyone else. So you can bring an image or a felt sense of yourself to mind, whichever is easier, more accessible. It can be, if it's an image, it can be how you are now. Or perhaps a younger version of yourself, even a toddler or a baby. Or maybe it's easier to have a felt sense of what it's like to sit here and now. Again, we don't want to struggle. So whichever feels most accessible. And see if we can build on that sense of warmth and care that we might have experienced with the benefactor. And we just modify the phrases slightly. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. Now I'll be silent. Can check in and see if perhaps different phrases, perhaps focusing on the body, perhaps having a felt sense, perhaps imagining, visualizing. This is your practice. You can experiment, explore. What supports the development, the cultivation, the growth, the experience of loving kindness? I'll do a few rounds of the phrases here. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. And then to end this meditation, feel the chair or the cushion against your body. Feel your feet on the ground. And when you're ready, you can gently open your eyes. So before we started that meditation, I talked about the difference between self-preoccupation and kind of like loving kindness for oneself. And I was doing this with my hands, kind of like self-preoccupation is like this, loving kindness is like this. I find that sometimes for myself, how I practice is I'm just noticing, is there kind of like a general tightening or a general kind of opening up? So that may be something too to kind of explore. That first, there's just different ways to kind of feel our way through this. Maybe it's with words or images, but also maybe it's just a felt sense of just having a little bit more spaciousness, which usually goes along with ease and peace. Whereas having some tightness usually goes along with some like wanting to make something to happen, trying to control things, and which turns out not to work as well as we think it should. So I just offer that as a way to kind of, you know, you can explore, be creative, experiment with these practices, and maybe part of it you could just see or feel into, is there a constricting or an opening up? It can also be that that really doesn't make sense to you and you're not even sure what I'm talking about, right? All of us kind of have our own ways, our own experience, and you can find one that works for you and is supportive for your practice. So now I'd like to open it up to any comments or questions about that practice, about what I said before about self-preoccupation versus loving kindness, the different aspects of practice, or anybody like to share what their experience was, or do you have questions? I left a little more silence than sometimes I do. But Paul, can we go back here? And how was that? And then over here.
Yeah. When I was thinking about a loving being, I tried a person that I'm not too close with, that I work with and enjoy. And then I tried puppy, and finally I settled on my nephew, who he's just very kind and sweet and little thing, so easy to love. And when I turned it back to myself, I kind of thought, as I wish for you to be healthy, I wish for me to be healthy too. And I imagined him wishing health on me as well. And it really, really worked. So, like you said, it's just a representation of things, and finding a way to make it make sense to me. That was really easy for me to do. As I wish for you, I wish for me. And yeah, it worked for me. Thank you.
Oh, great. I'm happy to hear that. I think Nikki teaches that way sometimes. Like, you can imagine, like, the benefactor is sending you loving kindness. And sometimes, I'm happy to hear this, that that worked, that you found a way. And I think you had to, right, do you still want to?
Yeah, thank you. First of all, I guess people always talk about, like, creativity in this practice, and I see a lot of potential value in that, just in terms of, like, the object. Like, I could think of my, like, I've been doing it with myself in the third person, so I find it somewhat easier if I think about myself, like, using, like, a different pronoun or my name than the self, like, may I be happy. Or, like, even thinking about metta for, like, inanimate objects, like ice cream or a bus. I saw, like, a bus that was, like, broken down on a freeway, and I felt, like, a lot of compassion for it. So it's kind of, I don't know. I mean, like, I guess it's, like, whatever works, you know? Like,
yeah, it's interesting what you said. I appreciate that you said that. You, right, that our circle gets bigger and bigger. We start to know we have this loving kindness for all kinds of things. Maybe it's not exact loving kindness, appreciation, delight in, compassion for. And I also want to acknowledge that, you know, this is kind of my take. Let's be experimental and creative. There are some teachers who say, no, do it this way. There's so much value in discipline. Right, and there is value in discipline. Right, we start to notice what's the nature of our resistance. What do we? What's the nature of our preferences? There's a lot that's so rich to learn if we're going to do discipline. So each of us kind of even has to find our way with that too. Are we going to be a disciplined way, or are we going to be a little bit more relaxed and find our way? I'm a teacher that tends to emphasize kind of a relaxed way, because that's my practice. But I know that's not necessarily everybody's practice, and not every teacher definitely has that approach either. So you can even be creative in whether you're going to be creative.
Thank you, Doctor.
Anybody else have a comment or a question?
So I have a comment and a question. My comment is similar to what I heard when I was doing meditation. I guess I wasn't ready to let go of my benefactor. And at the same time, sometimes I find it hard for me to be loving kind to myself. So I use the pronoun we. And playing with the language again, and that helped a lot. Because I think on previous day you said also, you know, it's as easy as changing the pronoun, and it could be, but you know, sometimes it's not. And then my question is, earlier you mentioned regret, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about it. It seems there's, like, maybe good things about, you know, the good, you know, it could be like a learning process too. I know, you know, I've done things in the past without thinking that. Now I would, you know, it's like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? You know, so, yeah. So it's very interesting, the concept of regret.
Yeah. First of all, I think that's great. May we be happy. May we be safe. I love that. I think that's great. Thank you. Yeah, so this idea of regret. In the Buddhist teachings, they make a real distinction between regret and guilt. And so regret is a feeling of remorse that I caused harm, I did something unskillful, maybe something like that. Whereas guilt flips over into self-preoccupation. Oh, I'm a bad person. I should have known better. Why didn't I do that? As opposed to regret, the Buddhist word is hiri. I kind of like the sound of that word, hiri. Is this remorse of acknowledging that perhaps you did something unintentionally, maybe it was intentionally, that caused harm to somebody else or to yourself. And to acknowledge the discomfort that arises when you notice that, like, oh, I didn't intend to, but I really hurt that person's feelings. Or I didn't intend to, but when I did that, it just really messed me up and something like this. But to notice the discomfort that you feel with that, and noticing that discomfort can be a real teacher for us, makes it a little bit less likely that we're going to do it again. And also just highlights for us that the way that we navigate the world and navigate our experience, sometimes we will do things that cause harm. And if we are in tune with what a consequence of causing harm is, discomfort, then it just becomes more clear to us that it becomes easier to find our way if we're a little bit sensitized to the discomfort that happens when we have regret. But not to get into guilt. Guilt, the way that we kind of in Buddhist English kind of say guilt is more when it slips into self-preoccupation. I'm a bad person. We're not saying I'm a bad person. We're saying like, oh, I have remorse. I'm experiencing remorse. I'm experiencing regret. That's different than I'm a bad person or I'll never get this or whatever it may be or something like that. So it's hiri often goes with otapa, another kind of Buddhist word, which is about the not wanting to cause harm in the future. So the hiri is about things that you already did, and then the wish to not do it in the future, which requires mindfulness to kind of be aware of what we're doing and what causes harm. One thing that I like about this is this idea that these two experiences, feeling regret or remorse about causing harm in the past and not wanting to do it in the future, are part of the protectors of ourselves and of everybody. Our communities, right? If we can kind of develop these and be aware of them, they can really, really support our communities, right? We're not causing harm, as well as support us. So that's kind of maybe that was a little more than you were expecting when you talked about regret. We have time for if there's some more comments, questions.
I just had a question about, comment, question about my practice lately. I've noticed what I'm doing them.
Sorry, I'm having a little time, but maybe you could just hold it closer.
Oh, there I noticed go. That when I'm doing my practice, there are times when my mind is wandering, but I'm solving a problem. You know, the kind of thing that used to happen when you're in the shower, you know, and you, oh... And it's like, is that normal? or am I not concentrating enough to get myself back in the present moment?
Well, can you say a little bit more? What do you mean by solving a problem?
Well, I'm figuring out what action I should take. You know, if I've had something like, what am I going to do to solve this? Or, you know, and then all of a sudden it comes to me while I'm in a deep calmness. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay. And then it's like, yeah, that's a good, I mean, nothing heavy, but just something that just occurs to me that, oh, I can get it done this way.
Yeah. I like that you said that it's kind of like in the shower. It's similar that when we relax, when there's this kind of like certain opening up, often there's an arising of some insights, some really good ideas. This is very common, in fact. So the trick is, when do you stop meditating and write it down, or go do something, or do you just keep meditating? So some teachers will say, just keep meditating and just notice. I've heard a teacher say that sometimes she kept a notepad next to her cushion, and she would just jot something so that she didn't have to think about it anymore. So I think you can experiment with this, but often what I do now is I just trust that if it was a really good idea, that it arose once, it'll arise again. So that that's a good idea. And then I don't feel like I have to really hold on to it, that I'll have access to it at the end of the meditation. And that's usually my experience, so. It's not uncommon for some people to want to write poetry, right? Or do some art, or express themselves in a certain way. Once after you kind of settle down and the mind gets a little bit more spacious, easeful, then it's just natural that ideas and some creativity will arise. Okay. So I wish you all some warm-heartedness, some care, love, respect, goodwill, and kindness. Thank you. I'll stay up here for a little bit if you have a question. I'll say that there's another class that starts here at 7:30, so just so you know that people are going to start arriving. And you're welcome to stay for that one, too. That's on the refuges, going for refuge stuff. So. Oh, thank you.